with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24/7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
The dawn of a new week brings with it, apparently, new challenges, new obstacles, or, if not new, certainly the reiteration of the challenges we continue to face on a daily basis and hope to be able to overcome, even as they continue to look at times tantamount to overwhelming. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Light the Tower. Here on The Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, and streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. My name is Craig White. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. We're with you up until noon, at the noon hour. It'll be Shirts and Skins, Chad and Trey. At 3, RBKD, and all its glory returns with all three pieces of that mercurial radio puzzle. Which is Rod Babers, Brad Kellner, and Kevin Dunn. Outstanding show. They come your way at 3 o'clock this afternoon. My co-host Jeff Howe will be joining momentarily. Meantime, also, our producer, the one and only Jonathan Snoop Daniel.
Oh, yeah.
On board again. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Oh, yeah. Good morning, Craig, to the way.
What are you wearing today? What is that hat?
Oh God.
It's an ACL hat.
Yeah. Okay. It's ACL Festival, Zilker Park, because I'm always repping for my favorite event that's not happening.
Yeah. I heard you say that a couple of weeks ago. You said it's your favorite event of everything. Does that include sports?
It rivals it, I got to say. Yeah. I'd have to think hard. But I love ACL Fest, and I love South by Southwest equally and ultimately.
Yeah. Well, and they're different things too than sports.
Yes.
Those are different. It's just like when being from North Carolina, I get the question, "What do you like better, North Carolina pork barbecue or Texas beef brisket?" And I said, "They're different culinary experiences." They're most of the time I'm going to want brisket and that sort of thing, but occasionally want a different palate change or whatever. And when I go on vacation, I eat some pork barbecue, but there's different. Memphis barbecue is a little bit different. Kansas City barbecue is different in terms of the sauce and things like that. So, you like to clear the palate and have a different culinary experience on that, just like you're kind of talking about a different cultural experience, whether it be music or in sports. Would that be a fair way to describe it?
Yes, and it only happens once a year for a little moment in time. So it's also it's like Christmas to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's good. So Christmas got canceled for you then in terms of...
It'll make me cry.
What was it, the spring?
I will cry.
Well, many things have been either set aside, canceled, postponed, or whatever. When it comes to... culinary experiences, I'm not the only one who enjoys a good culinary experience. I'm right up there, but I think the same can be said for my co-host and broadcast partner, the pride of Northwest Williamson County, and a proud graduate of Florence High School, and a former all-district offensive lineman of the Florence Buffaloes, Jeff Howe, who enjoys a good culinary experience when the opportunity does tend to present itself, does it not, Jeffrey?
I usually make my own opportunities in that department, Craig.
You don't
That's
wait.
What I mean.
Time and great food wait for no man.
No, they don't. The heck are we going to do today, partner? Where do you want to start?
Well, that's a great point. There are a lot of things that we're going to get to. At bottom of the hour, we have a regular Monday meeting, a conversation with Mike Roach.
A fresh off of vacation, Mike Roach, by the way.
How about that? So we'll visit with Mike to talk recruiting. Mike of the Horns 24/7 recruiting editor Variety, so he'll join us as well. We do have our inconceivable moment coming up a little bit later on this hour, but there are many things to get to. How much of now? I know, Snoop, you're a big golfing aficionado, at least when it comes to watching.
It was awesome. ESPN Plus, y'all hit a home run.
Right. Okay. Well, they had the early part of it. I mean, but did you? And then ESPN did kind of some, and then and then CBS, of course, had the main thrust.
I love to watch golf early. I don't know why.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about that with the British Open, with the Open Championship, watching it in the morning first thing. But as it was a little bit different watching it prime time. I kind of like that too. I was grilling some brats and hot dogs and stuff for the family, and so I had that on watching Colin Morikawa do extraordinary things on a golf course. It's not often that you see a guy make a two on a par four. Now, it was a short par four, to be sure, but to knock it to within 7 feet, that's going to be one of those great golf shots that we remember. Old golf, old school golf people will remember Jerry Pate's two iron on the 72nd hole at the U.S. Open in 76 at Atlanta Country Club. They may remember Gary Player of the Cypress Tree at Oakland Hill, the PGA. You know, there's going to be certain Jack Nicklaus with the 40-foot putt, the Jack Nicklaus with the putt at age 46, the iconic Vern Lundquist call, yes, sir! You know, that one, they're going to remember Tom Watson, the chip in for the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach at 82. There's on 17. There will be, you know, iconic shots that folks remember in major championships. The other side of that, too, John Vandeveld taking 7 on the 72nd hole when it looked like he had the British Open wrapped up several years ago. Remember that?
It was 99, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Way on back prior to that, Doug Sanders missed an 18-inch putt, which would have been a tap in to win what would have been his only British, only major championship, and Jack Nicklaus ended up beating him in the playoffs. So there are iconic shots.
Greg Norman, pretty much any time he got to the Sunday at Augusta.
Yeah. And by the way, that we talked about that, about Greg Norman. The U.S. Open, I believe it was Wingfoot in 84, going against Fuzzy Zeller, and every time it looked like Fuzzy had it beat, Greg Norman would come back with a great shot, and he makes a great shot up to 18, and Fuzzy's out in the fairway waving the white towel like he's going to, you know, I give up. Although Fuzzy ended up beating him there in that one. So, yeah, there's Tiger Woods. There's some great iconic shots. And that two on the par four, 16th hole, the short par four, his 70th hole for Colin Morikawa, right up there with some of the great golf shots that are going to be remembered for all time.
Did you know Greg Norman owns the domain name shark.com?
Does he really?
Yeah.
Smart move.
See, like, I figure with Shark Week, his site's probably getting a lot more hits.
And a lot of
activity
of hits
that it otherwise wouldn't.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway.
Here's your random useless fact of the day, courtesy of myself and the power of the Google machine.
There you go. All right, so there's that. Obviously, I don't know. How much NBA did you guys watch over the weekend? Did you watch much of NBA?
Honestly, not a ton. I miss, you know, Luka's historic performance. Yet another one from him
on Saturday night. Incredible.
Yeah, didn't watch a ton of NBA this week. And I'll tell you this, Craig. You know, my weekends at this point, you had young children at one point.
Snoop, it's different when you got a 2-year-old.
Yeah, you know, and you've been run around all week and working all week, and then when the wife tells you, hey, we need to go take care of X, Y, and Z on Saturday, you're pretty much taking care of X, Y, and Z on Saturday.
Yeah, right. I understand that. How about you, Snoop? Did you catch Luka's historic performance? 34 points, 14 rebounds, 19 assists.
Yeah, I saw it on SportsCenter. I the only basketball I really watched was I watched Rockets Kings yesterday, and I know it's okay.
I had that on for about 27 seconds, I think, and then
I enjoy watching De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah.
And Buddy Hield had a heck of a game.
Yeah,
but the Nets are just Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde.
I know.
They're like Paul Casey. Paul Casey had nobody's really talking about him because Morikawa dominated and he's a star. But Paul Casey has been terrible since the quarantine. But man, he was a rock star this past weekend.
Yeah, it was.
So that's like the Nets, you know, up and down.
Yeah, let me tell you who else is Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in the NBA. That'd be your Los Angeles Clippers.
Yes.
Who lost to the Nets last night. And that's a big loss. They played Denver this week, and that's basically for second place for the 2 seed. And so whoever loses that game, no, whoever wins that game.
Oh, the Mavericks.
Yeah, there could, depending on what the Mavericks do, because they've got big game this week, you know, that could be to avoid having to deal with the Mavericks. Now, the Mavericks at times look pretty ordinary, especially defensively. But they looked pretty terrific on Saturday night. They got some key stops when they had to. And then, I mean, think about it. I mean, they're playing the Bucks, and they were not limiting Giannis's minutes. He was playing. And they had a 7-point lead with under 2 minutes to go. And the Mavericks scored the last seven of regulation and forced overtime and then took it in. And yes, Luka had great, but they also got some other. Dorian Finney-Smith had a huge three that they had to have. So there were some big moments in that. And then the Spurs with an important win yesterday. That coupled with Portland's win over Philadelphia. I watched a little bit of that last night. That eliminated Zion. There will be no Zion in the playoffs, not even in the 9 seed. The Pelicans were eliminated because of Portland's win and the Spurs win over the Pels. And so the Spurs have a huge game tomorrow afternoon against the Rockets. Bill Schoening is going to join us tomorrow morning from courtside at AT&T, at the AT&T Center in San Antonio to preview that big matchup for the Spurs, who are trying to get to the playoffs for a 23rd consecutive year.
There hasn't been a whole lot that's been disappointing about the NBA bubble. I think Zion's time in the bubble is probably the most disappointing aspect of anything that's happened in the bubble so far.
Yeah. Yeah. And they split his minutes again. He didn't have a lot of big minutes.
I know that's been the most disappointing thing. The quality of basketball that I've had a chance to watch has been great. Everything's been great about the bubble. But, yeah, I think the league was hoping for a little bit more meat to be on that bone, Craig, so they can gnaw on it a little bit longer. You know what I mean?
I think we are headed for a potential 8-9 matchup of Portland and San Antonio if Memphis continues its free fall going the way they're going. Mexican Elvis texted in and said on the Specs text line at 337-3776 and said, did y'all hear that crazy stat Michael Wilbon threw out about the Spurs? Something like, in the past 22 years, they've only had a losing record for 64 days. Let that sink in. So, he said it's a ridiculous stat. When you made the playoffs 22 straight years, you're probably not going to have too many losing days.
Correct.
Record days. So they're trying to get there. And that would be... that would be 23 consecutive years for that. So there's some of that, and then of course there's football. Now,
Craig, before and this will be a good lead in.
And go ahead, and then I've got one other thing for
you. Snoop, can I get a breaking news sounder?
Yeah, so we'll go breaking news.
Craig, would you like to educate the listening audience on where Ben Bolt High School is located?
Down in South Texas.
Ben Bolt High School, as far as anybody knows, is the first UIL school to cancel its high school football and volleyball seasons.
Okay.
Just citing that based on the county orders and Jim Wilson. Now, we know there's this big discrepancy. We've had Greg Tepper on to talk about it. We've had Matt Stepp on to talk about it. The statewide discrepancy based on the way you read a county order,
right,
compared to the language that the Attorney General sent out. Some people are doing different things, saying, well, the state order go over as whatever the case. But basically, Ben Bolt Palito Blanco ISD is saying because of the COVID-19 orders in Jim Wells County, their schools were going to remain remote through October 9th, which was going to give them like an early November start for high school football and volleyball. And they said that is obviously just not feasible. So no high school football or volleyball for the seniors at Ben Bolt, Craig. That's I can't imagine... To say that's a tough pill to swallow is an understatement. I can't imagine what getting that news is like this morning.
No doubt. And there probably won't be many seniors. That's a 2A school and a small 2A at that.
Right.
And I think that plays into it as to why Ben Bolt, the Ben Bolt Badgers from the, as you mentioned, the Ben Bolt Palito Blanco ISD. And
we going Blanco or Blanco on that one?
There, it's Blanco.
Okay.
Blanco County.
Blanco, Texas, right. Blanco Panthers,
yes.
Et cetera.
Gotcha. Yes. So anyway, there's that. Not a big shock on that.
They're just the news item. They're just the first UIL school to throw in the towel.
Before we get back to football, we do have to mention baseball.
Do we?
Jeff Howe, yeah.
Do we?
Of course.
Astros swept by the A's. including the bench clearing brawl, the dugout clearing brawl yesterday.
If you're an Astros fan, start looking at that taxi squad to see who's playing, because you're about to be dealing with some suspensions.
Yeah, no doubt. Did you stay up late Friday night and watch all 13 innings of it?
I did not.
Okay. Because I did make it through that. I did watch it. That was after watching the Dodgers and Giants, and then I just flipped over and watched the end of that. But, yeah, so they got swept. Meanwhile, the Rangers. How about it, Snoop Daniel?
Yes,
I'll give
sir.
You credit. Yeah.
Give them the sweep.
Yeah.
Break out the brooms, baby.
Swept the Angels. And here we are through 14 games for the Rangers, 15 games for the Astros, and the Rangers have a better record than the Houston Astros.
Didn't we declare the Rangers dead on Friday? When we were in here.
At 3-8.
Prior to the weekend.
That's when Trey Elling walked in. We said, all right, you said, can we declare it in the air? Trey goes, yes. Which is supposed
it's
to be
a promo.
It's
yeah,
a promo.
Come,
now.
Yes.
Granted, I mean, a 5-game lead in a division, Craig, at this point is pretty hefty.
Yeah, it's significant.
But if you're talking about being in that playoff mix, the Rangers are right back in it.
Yeah. Yeah. They're in the post. Remember, 8 are getting in. 8.
What a difference a weekend makes,
yeah.
I guess.
So they're 6-8. The Astros are 6-9 right now. Now, I think the Astros are going to get healthy because they're playing the Giants. So I think they'll do that. Although the Dodgers, they struggle with the Giants. I mean, they split a 4-game series with them to open the year in San Francisco, and they took 2 out of 3 from them this weekend at Dodger Stadium, and I believe trailed in all 3 games. I know they trailed Saturday, lost. Clayton Kershaw looked awful, and they lost. And then Walker Buehler didn't look great yesterday and got no decision. They were down in that one and got 2 3-run homers. I'm trying to remember who hit it. A.J. Pollock hit a 3-run homer to give him the lead. And then Mookie Betts, who had been going great and then was in a slump, was in a slump over Friday and Saturday and then had a 3-run bomb yesterday for that. But Rangers, hats off to the Rangers. And by the way, hats, I texted a picture to you guys of the hat the Rangers wore on Friday. Uniform police needed to be notified of that.
That looks like a hat you buy like a truck stop out in the middle of nowhere.
Or a batting practice hat is what my son thought it looked like. It was just this red hat, and it had a little State of Texas with a little TX in it. It looked like something you'd get, you know.
At Big T Bazaar.
Yeah. Or even at Walmart for $2.99. You know, something like that. It just didn't look good. They have an iconic block letter T hat. That block letter T logo, I think, is really good. And they strayed away from that. I did notice this. John Blake, who's vice president of communications for the Rangers, has been there forever and ever, and I've known John a long time. He does a really fine job, and he tweets out what uniform the Rangers are going to wear every day. And the last 2 days, he said, like, the Rangers would be wearing home whites on Saturday, and then yesterday he said the powder blues on Sunday. Both times he said the cap with the regular block tee, and he didn't. I know John, he didn't say it to emphasize it, but I have a feeling he was saying it to let everybody know, because they might have gotten some blowback on that from fans.
That hat was awful.
Yeah. So
you should just keep that one in the closet with like the Pittsburgh Pirates, the Willie Stargell hat with the horizontal stripes on it.
The pillbox hat? Yeah, didn't go for the pillbox.
Just not doing that anymore. Just put that one away, Rangers fans.
For those
Rangers fans, if you're a fan and bought that hat, you ought to be ashamed of yourself, first off. Second off, franchise, don't do that again.
For those of you who are uniform Knicks, like Chad Hastings is, and I am to a lesser extent, but I sent that photo to Chad and to Trey also. Trey, the picture they had, Trey was like, that's awful. Most everybody did not like it. If you're watching baseball during the course of the week, have you noticed that the Phillies more and more frequently are wearing the Keith Moreland 1970s and 80s now? They've gone back to the powder blue with that kind of maroon look. They're not red and white now. No. They've gone back to that kind of maroon with that. I say the Keith Moreland's because Keith played, was on a World Series championship team 40 years ago that won that that wore that uniform.
Is that one of those deals like what's old is new again? Everybody kind of going back to the powder blues
in some
way, shape, or form?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, my son, my youngest son was asking me, he goes, how many teams wore that powder blue? I said, several in the 70s to 80s. You had the Phillies wore it, the Cardinals. The Expos, the Cubs, the Royals, the Mets briefly did as well. I'm leaving somebody out. I know there were six for sure, maybe seven. Well, and the Rangers had it on occasion. The Rangers did on occasion because I had one of those had the Texas spelled out on that as well. So they did it on occasion. It was a different powder blue than what the Rangers were throwing down. So anyway, then there's baseball. All right, so now we're on the football. And, you know, here we're hearing more and more about the increasing doubts with regard to an impending college football season, more likely in the minds of many an impending shutdown of the college football season. I think it was Dan Patrick tweeted out this morning that he's heard from sources, Big Ten and Pac-12, that they're going to shut it down tomorrow, mm-hmm. that they're going to do that, and that the SEC is hell-bent for playing, and that the Big 12 and ACC in Dan Patrick, citing the source's words, quote, are on the fence. That sort of thing. Again, that would be something that might not shock those who are following all of this very, very closely as to where that is. So, I don't think there's any big shock to that we're hearing that anyway.
It's not shocking, Craig. It's just disappointing.
Sure it is.
It's disappointing, and quite frankly for me, I'm just disgusted with the whole process. And I think it goes deeper than just college football. You know, we as a country, we knew what the ramifications were going to be if we didn't take this thing seriously. And I don't care what side of the political spectrum you're on, how you feel about the virus, what have you. We knew, facts are facts. If you don't get this thing under control, there is a chance you're not going to have football in the fall. And I understand that people took this seriously, wore their masks, followed all the protocols. There's a lot of people that didn't. And that's definitely part of it that has to be talked about. But the other part, Craig, that's finally bubbling to the surface that we have to talk about, and you can't, the toothpaste is out of the tube at this point. You have to talk about college athletics without this veil of amateurism mm-hmm. hanging over it. It's all about money. I guarantee you, the MAC would still be playing football if the conference didn't lose somewhere, I've seen the number fluctuate, somewhere between $38 and $45 million in payouts they were going to get for payday games if those things didn't go away.
If the Big Ten had not said we were moving to a conference yeah. games only model where you would have had all of those games, like you said, there was a lot of money that went away off
yeah.
of that.
And
because Ohio University is not going to get the same amount of money to play at Texas State as one of the other MAC schools
would
get
to play
at Ohio State. It's a little different.
Right. So that's a really big part of it is the money because the science of it doesn't make any sense. How can the MAC say all of our medical experts, everybody we've talked to said it's not safe to play, yet Bob Bowlsby can tell multiple media outlets yesterday that the Big 12's got no indication from their medical experts mm-hmm. that anything's wrong. They can proceed as they were planning on. So there's clearly a divide. You can say either there's clearly a divide in the science, which at this point I don't know that there is that big of a divide because I don't know what would have changed that drastically in a span of 48 hours to or 72 hours to make everybody make these decisions. It's all about money. And the Power Five should be, I would expect them to, especially leagues like the SEC and you know the Big 12, because the Big 12 does split. Because this is why when you get back into the conference expansion discussion, no, they're taking their pie and they're only splitting it between 10 schools.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, Craig, it's all about, it's a business. Like, let's stop pretending that this is just, oh, these are amateur athletes playing for the name on the front, not the name on the back. No, it is a multi-million dollar business for a reason. There's a reason coaches' salaries and revenues and everything is the way it is. At this point, it's got to be about, okay, how much of this revenue can you save? And now what you're looking at is, okay, is the TV revenue there? So I do almost appreciate the fact that we've stopped pretending that this isn't about money because, yeah, money is a really big factor. And once we start looking at the dollars and cents of it, maybe we can start to make heads or tails of these decisions that are being made.
I'm gonna give you two words that kind of fit what's going on right now, or at least depending on which side you're looking at, depending on which conference you're looking at, depending on, for that matter, what sport you're looking at. And the words are supportive narrative. And so what you just laid out with what the MAC was saying about the medical opinions that they are receiving from the people they consult in the medical community talk about the risk. It supports their narrative for their decision. The Big 12, the SEC, the ACC right now, those three are saying we have not, we're hearing that student athletes might be even safer being on campus doing that. Trevor Lawrence was very, very outspoken about it, the Clemson quarterback of the weekend, in his tweets. There were others talking about it as well. I think Caden Stearns. And what has started, of course, is the hashtag we want to play. Mm-hmm. Push. There was a Zoom call about that. So you have a strong push from student athletes who want to play. So again, supporting their narrative on it. So the medical opinions and advice that sides are going to reach are going to be there to support their narrative on that. So there's going to be that no matter how you feel about it one way or the other. Each side will use and demonstrate their own evidence that they have from the people they are consulting to support their narrative to say whether they should or should not play. That's where the debate is lying on both sides of this. Both sides are using the information that they have sought. Now, here's the rub. The players will, the folks will say, well, is it just their medical community saying what they want them to say, or are they using it as independent research? And there's the gray area about that.
Yeah.
So that's still out there.
Here's the bottom line for me, Craig, and I've seen some of the smaller conference commissioners or athletic directors be quoted as saying, well, it's either safe to play or it's not. If this were 100% about player safety and nothing else, they would have called this thing a long time ago. They would have said back in June or July, look, it's not going to happen between the testing you have to do and travel concerns. Just shelve it till the spring.
Right.
But clearly it's not just about player safety. I'm not saying that component is irrelevant because it is relevant. That is being taken into consideration. But let's not pretend that's the only thing these athletic directors and the college and the university presidents and the conference commissioners, let's not pretend that's the only thing they're thinking about right now.
There are many things at play here. And Aaron asked me this question when I was chatting with him during a break. And they went on to talk about this as, is this the most crucial week in the history of college football? And as hyperbolic as it may sound, it might be, based on the decisions that could come down this week.
Snoop, I need a breaking news sounder, sir.
I think I know where you're
Craig,
going with this one.
I think this is it. According to the Detroit Free Press, and I'm glad I have my ad blocker on here. According to the Detroit Free Press, the Big Ten has canceled the 2020 college football season. According to the Free Press, that means no games for Michigan or Michigan State, but it is starting to get out, Craig, from major media outlets. I'm reading opening paragraph from the Detroit Free Press. The Big Ten has voted to cancel the 2020 college football season in a historic move that stems from concerns related to the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. Multiple people with knowledge of the decision confirmed to the Free Press. The sources requested anonymity. The president's voted 12-2. So what Dan Patrick said is apparently what the case was. So according to the Detroit Free Press, they're the first outlet I've seen report it. No Big Ten football this fall.
With an eye toward postponing to the spring, I would imagine. It may not say it in the
sources. Told the Free Press Saturday that Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren prefers a spring football season, although no final decision has been made. I just don't like. I don't know what the Big Ten was thinking, Craig, because you do the schedule release last week. So what changed in less than a week that made you go from hey, we're gung ho, we got a schedule, we're doing this, to we can't do this?
Yeah. And if the Big Ten has made its announcement, can the Pac-12 be far behind?
The Pac, then this isn't formal. This is just a free press. But, yeah, the Pac-12 has been in lockstep with the Big Ten on just about everything. So, at this point, but here's the interesting thing, Craig, as we get ready to go to break. There's nothing stopping the Big 12, the ACC, or the SEC from saying, you guys can sit out, but we're going to go ahead and play.
Well, not only them. The Sun Belt, Conference USA, the American.
Yeah,
they could elect to play as well. You know, so we're hearing, you know, the group of five as well as the power fives that are remaining. That's going to be the intriguing thing to watch. All right, coming up, we'll talk some Longhorn football of the recruiting variety as we visit with Mike Roach, recruiting editor of Horns 24/7. That's next when we continue with Light the Tower here on the Horn 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260 and streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
It's the Bud Light Countdown.
This is Light the Tower here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. You know, there's always the conversations during the break, and
I don't want to keep Mike waiting, but we got to tell the story.
It's important to do this.
So Craig and I just kind of were talking about the weekend as we do, and
trying to be understanding of our partners and they of us,
and
stuff
so
that's
telling
going
Craig,
on.
You know, I thought it was apropos that, you know, with all the college football stuff going on. In case you missed it, multiple media outlets reporting now that the Big Ten is going to not play football this fall. I thought it was apropos that my two-year-old just decided to drop trowel in the hallway last night and just relieve herself on the floor.
But right, Craig, there, and so you had the big holler coming out. Like there was the shock of your two-year-old dropping her pants and then executing an excremental bodily function right there in your house.
But, Craig, you let me know there's a positive spin to this.
The mere fact that she dropped her garments to do that is a step in the right direction of potty training.
Small victories.
You take them where you can get them, especially this day and age.
I'm looking at this in a completely different light. So.
Yeah, because I'm not the one having to clean it up. I understand. I get that. Maybe Mike Roach can clean up some things for us here.
Yeah, joining us right now on the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline, fresh off of vacation, he is the recruiting editor at Horns 24/7. Get him on Twitter at MikeRoach247. He is Mike Roach. Mike, sorry for the delay there, but thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
No problem, man. Prayers for you and your daughter, man. I spent a week with my nephew last week in a condo in Galveston, so I get it.
Too, so. Well, Mike, we've got I don't know. We've got good news. We've got bad news. We've got maybe bad news. There's a lot of places we can go, but let's start with this. While you were out, Texas picks up two verbal commitments: Michael Mazlitsky, the offensive lineman from Florida, and they stay in the state of Florida to get a wide receiver, Jaden Alexis, from Pompano Beach. You've been on these two recruitments. Everything was trending Texas in both of those towards the end, and Jaden Alexis' case for a while. What is Texas getting in these two prospects from Florida?
Yeah, Michael, let's start with Michael Mazlinski, who is a guy who I don't think is going to tip the rating scales for Texas, one of the lower-rated prospects in the class. But, you know, when you're looking at centers, I think that ratings can always be deceiving, especially for that position. For some reason, general consensus in football undervalues the center position. To me, it's one of the hardest, positions to really find a true difference maker at that position. So if you can find one and you believe you have one, get him and hold on to him. And that's what Texas believes they have in Michael Mazlinski. He's an NFL bloodline guy. You know, his dad played at Tennessee. He played in the NFL for a long time, and he's now the strength and conditioning coordinator for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think his brother plays. His sister, they're a football family. His sister, I think, works in social for a team. And so they're all about football. And, you know, when you watch Mazlinski play, one thing's clear is he plays with really good effort, he plays with really good technique, and he plays with really good tenacity, finishes his blocks really well. I don't have a great feel for his level of competition. Private school in Jacksonville, Florida, I just don't know enough about Florida football to tell you what kind of guys he's playing, but everything on film looks good there. And so, you know, I think a lot was made of the fact that this was a family friend of Herb Hand, but this wasn't a nepotism type of thing. I mean, this is a guy that not only Herb Hand wanted, but Mike Yurcich was very much on board with him chasing, and Tom Herman as well. So, you know, it came down to Michigan State and Iowa near the end of the recruitment. I don't know about you, but when you're looking at offensive linemen and Iowa's involved, that always kind of piques my interest. So, you know, all in all, I think that You know, I would equate this commitment as one to like Puna Ford, where you look at him coming out of high school and think, well, maybe he's a little bit maxed potential-wise, or maybe, you know, he doesn't blow you away on measurables. But, you know, sometimes you can just add those really good, football players, and you can do it in spots. With Alexis, you're right. That's something we've been tracking for quite a long time. I can't tell you how many times I've mentioned his name on radio shows or articles or anything. In fact, I had Jeff, I had that story, his commitment story, sitting in our admin for about 2 months.
So yeah, been there for a while.
Yeah, just I would go through there and update it every time there was a new commitment, or I'd go and push back the date so it would just stick at the top of our admin, and everybody had to stare at it for 2 months. And that's how good we felt about it. We were kind of, we're 24/7 kind of broke the news in May that Texas was really pushing into a good position with him. And, since that time, it was pretty much on commitment watch. And so I spoke with him yesterday and had some quotes up at Horns 24/7 last night, and he's just a phenomenal kid, a phenomenal fit, I think, for Texas, both culturally and on the field. What you're getting on the field is a speed demon. Adding a 4.41 legit guy who runs 10.75 in the 100, and he can play inside or outside. He's kind of built like a running back, I think, almost in the way that Devin Duvernay was. And those guys really intrigued me. I think that's really where the slot position is going, is the guys who are versatile enough to play both positions. And, when you throw those quick screens, one of the ways you can shed tackles is by just being lower than the other guy and running through contact. And so, he can certainly do that. He's a class president. I believe he's like number one in his class academically. His dad played in the NFL as well. So a lot of things to like, really, with both of those commitments.
Mike, I want to ask you a question. This is, a little bit, it's not off topic, but it's kind of off the center of what the topic is. And here's where I'm going with this. We hear a lot about players, active players on a college campus who enter the transfer portal. And then and I've often heard people say, the transfer portal, that gets noticed by recruits out there. And then in the case of Texas, we are players that pull their name out of the transfer portal. Apparently it's happened again. Myron Warren is back out of the transfer portal. Do you ever hear any of that when you're visiting with recruits about saying they're concerned because they hear about guys entering the transfer portal?
It would depend on the cases. I think when you have a bunch of guys jump into the portal, yeah, it's cause for concern, especially if a lot of those guys are promising players. I think everybody understands that. And maybe a case like Myron Warren, where Texas has added a lot of depth to the defensive line in the past couple of years, maybe he looked around and said, hey, I need to explore some options because I don't know what's in store for me here. I was recruited under another staff, and now we've got this new defensive staff in here, and I don't know what they want from me. I think that's a concern. I think the ones that cause more concern are guys like Anthony Cook, who, of course, went into the portal and then out of the portal and back in and out. And, a guy like that who played last season and was going to be relied upon this season, I think people will start to look when more and more guys like that go in. But I don't think it's an across-the-board type of thing.
Horns 24/7 recruiting editor Mike Roach joining us here on Light the Tower on the Horn. Mike, speaking of transfer portal, I know you were working on the Tony Fields situation, the grad transfer linebacker out of Arizona. Anything new or final on that situation yet?
I reported this morning that hearing the buzz is now. We heard some really strong things about Texas last week. Obviously, he made a visit to Texas, had a pre-existing relationship with a couple of the players, including Chris Adamora, who when we say West Coast for football purposes, Las Vegas is on the West Coast where Fields is from. And those guys play a lot of 7-on-7 together. And, you'll see a lot of Las Vegas kids play on California teams. And so he knew him from the 7-on-7 circuit and was able to hang out with him and a couple of the other players. And, and so we heard some really strong things for Texas going in. And then this morning got a text early from a source just telling me that, it sounded like West Virginia had the buzz. And they were always kind of the sneaky wild card nobody was wanting to talk about. Their new defensive coordinator, Jamil Adai, is a former Arizona coach from the Las Vegas area, had really strong ties to Fields. And I think everybody talked in terms of Texas and Minnesota, but I mentioned early on that West Virginia was really a dark horse to watch in this one. So as of right now, my prediction's on West Virginia unless something changes.
Mike, how about in addition to that, what's on your radar that you'll be following closely this week?
Really, I think like everybody will be tuned in to see if we're going to play football this year. And what's on my radar specifically is, no college football would suck, but if there's high school football, that would be, I could still be able to go out and see games. But what's on my radar is it will the UIL follow what college football does, if that's the case. And so those are all things we're watching. I'm trying to track each state's different schedule and what they're doing. And especially with these out-of-state commitments now, we're looking at maybe going and seeing Colorado kids in the spring and California kids in the spring. And I think Alexis told me Florida won't start till like November. So, tracking schedules and watching what happens with football this week is going to be everything on my plate.
He's Mike Roach, recruiting editor, Horns 24/7. Mike, just like you, we're going to be watching to see what the big decisions are this week with regard to college football. As always, I appreciate your time, and good to hear you back with us again coming off the vacation. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
All right. That's Mike Roach, Horns 24/7. And, when I asked him, I said, what's on your radar? I was talking about from the recruiting, but he's right. Everybody's watching to see what the decisions are going to make, because ultimately that's going to affect everything and what we're doing in our individual fiefdoms, so to speak.
I'm hoping against hope, Craig, that we've got the UIL to lean on at this point, because my hopes that we get a 10-game truncated season for the Longhorns in 2020.
Are wavering a little?
I don't even know if hanging by a thread describes the state of despair I feel about the current situation right now.
We'll have more on that coming up. It's inconceivable to think about. Which, by the way, will bring us the inconceivable next here on Light the Tower on the Horn.
Commission.
Inconceivable.
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 You keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Well, it probably means inconceivable to consider the Big Ten announcing, and they haven't, but might announce tomorrow, according to publications and Detroit Free Press, right? They're saying that.
Yes.
That they might not.
Announcement expected tomorrow, formal announcement, and all the scribes out west are saying, look, if the Big Ten's going to announce it tomorrow, then expect the Pac-12 to follow suit, if not make a joint announcement with the Big Ten tomorrow. I'm just reading Twitter, Craig, because, man, apparently Scott Satterfield, the Louisville head coach, is having a press conference right now.
Yeah.
And he's just – his bag of you-know-whats to give is apparently empty.
Really?
So, yeah, he's just talking about the lack of leadership and basically any conference commissioner out there, they're getting thrown under that bus – something fierce by Scott Satterfield at Louisville. So scanning that on the Twitter machine right now.
So there you go. So all of that may fall into the inconceivable file. That's a given. Here's a couple other things. There have now been, at least recently, 4 deaths linked to methanol-based hand sanitizers in 2 states.
I've seen this.
Yeah. Turned out to be deadly for 4 people in 2 states.
I've seen it.
Health officials reported this week that 15 adults were poisoned in Arizona, New Mexico in May and June. And here's the rub. They were poisoned after drinking hand sanitizer.
Yeah, why would you do that?
Besides the 4 who died, 3 had ongoing vision problems, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said. All had consumed sanitizers containing methanol or wood alcohol. It's like they used to say with, wood alcohol with moonshine that you'd go blind. It could make you go blind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Active ingredient that kills germs in legitimate sanitizers is ethyl alcohol, which is consumable, but some companies have been replacing it with methanol, which is used in antifreeze. There are people who drink antifreeze, too, Arizona, New Mexico. Think of the Walter Whites of the world out there, right?
Craig, the further away we get from the end of his life, the more I realize George Carlin was one of the great philosophers of our time.
Yes.
I've come across some of his stuff lately that just, he said it in like 1999 or 2005, and so it's never been more appropriate than right now in the year 2020. Some of the takes George Carlin had on just, quite frankly, how just stupid we're getting as a country.
Yeah, exactly. Then you could have what's called dumb luck. Here's a guy, you've seen these guys around, right, with metal detectors walking around.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I say it when I'm on vacation, like on the beach, you know, I might find a coin or, you know, get lucky.
I feel like that's either tourists or retired folk that have really nothing to do except walk the beach and scan for treasures.
Well, here's a dude named Marush Stepien, and he was just had his metal detector out somewhere in Scotland. Got a ding, 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 discovered it looked like a bronze object buried just a foot and a half beneath the ground. Reported his discovery after getting strong signals from the earth around the object. Archaeologists worked on the site for 22 days and discovered a sword still in its scabbard, decorated straps, buckles, rings, ornaments, and chariot wheel axle caps, as well as evidence of a decorative rattle pendant that would have been attached to the harness, the first to be found in Scotland. This is from the Bronze Age, something that's been gone and hidden for 3,000 years.
Wow.
How about that? Up on your metal detector.
I bet you the guys on Pawn Stars would be like, look, I mean, I can give you about $100 for it. I mean, I'm taking all the risk here.
That's good. I'll throw in this can of this old Bull Durham tobacco pouch.
But your expert said it was $30,000. Look, I'll go $150, and that's not a dime more. That's the most
I can do.
I'm taking all the risk here.
Yeah,
it's gonna sit around for a long time. I got to find somebody to buy it.
Yeah, here's somebody who took a risk. It was an auctioneer. And he was just auctioneer Andy Stowe. This happened a couple of weeks back. And he was looking into the letterboxes at his office. This is a professional auctioneer. And he said, I saw an envelope was just kind of hanging out of the letterbox, literally just hanging out. So he opened up the envelope, and there was a pair of spectacles. And then he did some checking. Yeah, they belonged to Gandhi.
Holy crap.
They were worth $19,000 at auction, you know. Gandhi. How about that? So, so spectacles that belonged to Gandhi at one time worth $19,000, and they were just kind of hanging out. They'd been kind of casually misplaced and were just hanging out of a letterbox.
Awesome,
my man Mahatma.
Yeah, and it fetched more than $19,000.
I don't know that anybody ever referred to Gandhi in that manner, Snoop.
My man Mahatma, I like that.
So Gandhi's $19,000 glasses again. You take that to the Pawn Stars guys. That gets you what? Probably about $250-$300.
It's like, look, I know you say they belong
to Gandhi, but I'm going to need some. I can't sell it without any.
I got to have a little more documentation here. And besides, I mean, they're just spectacles. I mean, you can run up to Walgreens and get you some plus.
Just because
2.75.
It's old doesn't make it. Just like, because whatever. It's old doesn't make it valuable.
Yeah,
Greg.
You know. So,
By the way,
saying they're worth $19,000. I can give you $190. I'll give you 1/100th of it. Okay.
I'm cracking on them. I love Pawn Stars. That show.
Yeah, I start saying you wouldn't be able to do an impersonation of those dudes unless you'd been watching it.
Yeah.
For a time. You're familiar with Kelly Nasura, does a great job here in the office, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Do you know what one of her big hobbies is? One of the big things is she's a beekeeper.
Mm.
Keeps bees.
Yeah, so bees are like endangered now, right? We have to preserve the bees.
Here's a dude.
My dad, before he passed away, is real big on that. Like, if there's a bee in the house, like, no, don't kill it. Gotta save the bees.
Yeah. Well, here's a dude named Justin Schmidt, who's a beekeeper. And he was doing an interview, and they asked him. He's also an entomologist and a chemist. So he really studies bees closely. And he also is trying to understand the pain that insects produce when they sting you. So he's okay with getting stung by it. And so his big thing is, he says, I was stung. I've been stung over 1,000 times for science. Says he's been stung for science. I've been called many things over my lifetime, but I think some of my favorites are the king of sting, the connoisseur of pain. He definitely puts the work in to deserve those titles. I've been stung at least 1,000 times. A lot of them were just boring stings, he said. So what constitutes a boring sting? Anytime you work with honeybees, sooner or later you get a pinch, so you get stung. You hardly count those. So his fascination with pain by stings happened by accident. And he goes, when he was a PhD student at University of Georgia, I was a chemist. I was looking for interesting projects so that I could do chemistry, which involved insects. I was down in Georgia, and I got stung by a harvester ant. That really hurt, and I thought, ow, chemistry right here.
So it wasn't like that scene in one of the Jackass movies where Dave England and Steve-O played a nice game of beehive tetherball?
Yeah, something like that. He said, I thought I'll go compare a bunch of other stinging insects and see how different they are in chemistry. In the process, you get stung by yellow jackets, paper wasps, fire ants, solitary wasps, and I would record these things. So he's been stung over 1,000 times. Nice work if you can get it? Maybe. Not sure. All right, so there it is.
The term boring sting just...
Oh. Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of nothing like, routine about getting stung.
Is that
kind of
like jumbo
Rick?
Shrimp or occasional irregularity? You know? Something to keep in mind. That was a George Carlin thing, by the way. Yeah. All right. Hour number 2 of Light the Tower coming up here on the Horn.